Welcome to the Quest Podcast, proudly presented by the Muscular Dystrophy Association as part of the Quest family of content. I'm your host, Mindy Henderson. Together, we are here to bring thoughtful conversation to the neuromuscular disease community and beyond about issues affecting those with neuromuscular disease and other disabilities and those who love them. We are here for you to educate and inform, to demystify, to inspire, and to entertain. We are here shining a light on all that makes you, you. Whether you are one of us, love someone who is, or are on another journey altogether, thanks for joining. Now let's get started. James Ian is a singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, actor, and writer. He lives with spinal muscular atrophy type 3 and is a passionate advocate for authentic representation of disabled actors in TV, film, and other media. James's music is featured on the iHeartRadio website. His filmography includes several movies and commercials, TV series, and documentaries, including The All-Nighter, Pugsley, Kimbu and Kids, and Inner Warrior. James grew up in Maryland and attended college and law school in Washington, D.C., and now resides in Los Angeles. James, thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited to talk to you.
Thank you, Mindy, for having me. Same here. Really great to talk to you and looking forward to it.
Awesome. Well, would you mind starting out a little bit? I should say I've also got SMA. I'm SMA type 2, so different type than you. So do you mind just talking a little bit about your diagnosis and how it affects your daily life?
Sure. Yeah. So, like you said, Mindy, you're familiar. And even though we have different types, I'm pretty sure we have some of the same, kind of physical manifestations of it. For me, I think they often call the type 3, later onset. So I had kind of exhibited symptoms, I think, throughout my childhood, but it wasn't noticeable enough to the level where someone was like, hey, what's going on? Is there any medical reason that you were running this way or doing whatever? Like, I played sports and stuff. I had really bad asthma as a kid. So I ran slower than, my teammates and, classmates and all that stuff. But my doctors and everyone else just thought it was because of my asthma. And they thought as I would get older, I'd kind of grow out of the asthma and be able to, run better and do those things. And so, when I was about 14, when I started to kind of hit puberty more, I started to fall a lot more and trip. And at that point in time, I could get up on my own and I was using stairs and all that stuff. And it still, I don't think, was really noticeable. But one day, my parents noticed that when I got up from a chair, I could not do it without using my hands to push off of the seat. And it wasn't even a major thing. It was just I just give a quick little push and I could lift myself up, just fine. I just couldn't do it without that. And so, they saw that, I couldn't do it. And so that took me to, took me to doctors and I got the incorrect diagnosis of muscular dystrophy initially, which is fairly common, in the SMA community on that kind of diagnosis journey. And then, after second opinions, they did, several tests and found out that I did have spinal muscular atrophy. But even at that time, there was not a lot, obviously they know more today about it than they did.
Right. So you were, how old were you when you got that SMA? Were you 15, 16?
Well, I was 14 going on 15.
Oh, you were 14. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I just had my 25th diagnosis anniversary was on June 9th. So,
oh, well, happy anniversary. I don't know that that's appropriate, but
no. I call it my Smanniversary. So,
I love that. That's awesome. So tell me, being 14, I was diagnosed when I was 15 months old. And okay. So I don't, it was kind of up to my parents to really live that journey, unfortunately, and deal with the information. What was it like for you being 14, almost 15, and to hear that all of a sudden you had this health condition?
Yeah, it was scary. My parents for sure at that age, I didn't fully understand everything, all I knew was the body that I was living in. And so I it didn't really feel like it affected me that much. I mean, it did, but like I said, I was running and stuff, and I was just kind of like slower than everyone else, than my non-disabled peers. So for me, it felt like it was kind of closure, because I had felt for a while that like something, I knew that I was different, from my friends and stuff when I did sports and stuff. And I was like, why can I not jump as high?
Yeah.
Something feels, different to me. And so it was in that way, I was like, oh, that's the answer. But then, I think, like I said, my parents were like very devastated and really upset and were kind of worried about the life ahead. For me, I was like, we'll just kind of see when we get there, because right now I've been doing all the things that I pretty much wanted to do. So I don't really know, So
right.
Just like more of a closure thing in that regard of like unanswered questions. But then it was like, all right, I don't know what it's going to be like in 20 years or whatever. So.
Mm-hmm. And what has it been like, since it's a bit of time has passed, what's the journey been like for you? I mean, you seem like such an upbeat, positive guy. Have you been able to roll with it pretty well and stay positive? Have there been difficult moments?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. When I started to, I hit my growth, in high school, I grew a lot, taller. And so
right.
It started to hit me harder, end of junior year, senior year, I was falling more. Mm-hmm. And I noticed it was a little bit more difficult to kind of go upstairs or do whatever. And so that was hard. It was a shock to the system. And so when I got to college, I went to school on what we call the hilltop. So it was a lot of walking, a lot of uphill, And
yep.
So I ended up taking the second semester of my freshman year off, because it was just, my body couldn't handle it, and I needed to adjust. And so that was hard. I became during those years, I became very much withdrawn.
Yeah.
So I was very much a people person all my life.
And yeah.
I was just like, I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to talk about it. I tried to hide my SMA because I could for a long time. So I was like, I don't want to engage with people. I'm just going to stay in my room or do whatever. And then that second semester I went home. So no one saw me. And I was just like, it was hard to deal with mentally, all that stuff. And so when I came back to school the following year, it was still an adjustment, but then I kind of had this epiphany of starting to tell my story and stuff.
Yeah.
And I felt a lot better. People were very accepting for the most part. I started to have a great social life in college. And so I was really happy and enjoying it. And when I started to just, learn my body and I knew what I needed to do, I felt better physically,
So yeah. After
years where I felt really good physically, it's just in the last 8 or 9 years, when I fall, I can't get up on my own anymore. And so I have really started to see the progression of SMA really start to take effect in that time period.
Yeah.
So it's been tough. I have my days. I mean, I only know what I know. And so the weird thing I will say is it is very strange to be able to do things that I could at a certain point of time, just in a number of years ago, and then not be able to do them. That is wild mentally for me. I'm like, I can't believe that I can't do this and I could do this however many years ago, So that's been the tough part. And it's like you're always kind of adjusting to it. You're adjusting to a changing body all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been tough. I am kind of upbeat, like you said, and that's just because I think I have so many things on my plate that it's hard to kind of dwell on it.
Right. It's true.
But I do have my days of depression and feeling really down about it and I get angry about it too,
Yeah.
Because you're angry that I can't do what I did, whatever, however many days or months or years ago it was. And so that's hard, but it's like ups and downs with anything with life, I think, but I will say for me, to see the progression in real time into that is hard to deal with at times, and that's what I'm really kind of coming to grips with at the present time. That's
right.
My big thing.
Right. And yeah, and you describe it so well. I mean, I love the way that you kind of described it as, you know, it's sort of an ever-changing body that you're living in. And that's, it's so true. And that's hard when you think you got a handle on it and then something else changes.
Yeah.
So, but I think, you know, like you said, it's healthy to feel angry sometimes, and it's healthy to feel down sometimes. And, you know, we have to give the space to all of those emotions, I think. Otherwise, you know, it's going to go somewhere, and, you know, and so I think we have to honor it and give it time to work its way through us.
Right.
So
part of our human, the human condition.
It is. It really is. And, you know, you talked about having a lot on your plate, and I want to get into that, because you are a total Renaissance man. You act, you sing, you play instruments. How do you even describe yourself? Are you more of an actor? Are you a musician? How do you label yourself? Yeah, not that we need labels, but
yeah, that's a really good question, Mindy. It is hard, because like I love just creative expression. I love creating things.
Mm-hmm.
I love being an artist. And so I honestly derive kind of like equal amounts of joy, I think, from both. They kind of allowed me to do. Oh, like it comes from the same place, but they're a little different, you know? And so I think it's just, it kind of depends on the day, but I think yeah. I'm always both, and I'm always in both spaces, to be honest. You know, I'm either always auditioning or working on some sort of acting project,
mm-hmm.
and I'm always doing something music related, you know? So it's kind of, I just kind of say artist, but I love both. And I also think both are really important from a disability representation perspective,
yes.
because they're not there in both of those kind of fields, you know, so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I also kind of wanted to throw out there just the idea that you have these passions that you're getting to live into and make such a prominent part of your life. And I think that that's another thing that I would say about living with disability or illness is that, you know, if you can look for the things in your life that you're truly, truly passionate about and do those things in whatever capacity you can, just incorporating those things into your life at all makes a night and day difference. If you've got stuff that lights you up when you wake up in the morning, that's huge.
Yes, I totally agree. You know, it's what you do, what makes you tick and that you're passionate about. And I heard this thing that was like, happiness is having something to like, look, having things to look forward to.
Yeah.
And that like kind of hit me, and I do, you know, like these projects and stuff, whatever they might be, no matter what it is, no matter what the scale is, if it's, you know, something that not many people will see or tons of people see, I just look forward to all of that. And I just get excited about everything.
That's so great. I have to ask, what instruments do you play?
Yeah. So I play piano, guitar, drums, bass. And then I do auxiliary percussion stuff like bongos and stuff, you know,
oh, wow.
like that. And then I'm a vocalist vocalist has been like the primary thing
to me,
but throughout the years I've learned those just to like supplement, you know, my live stuff. But my first introduction to music was my parents got me into piano lessons when I was like 5 years
old. Okay. So, same.
Yeah.
In fact, I also wanted to be a singer and have spent time pursuing music over the course of my life. More of like a country music vibe. So not sure if that's what you're into. But when I told my parents that I wanted to sing, I mean, they were for it in kind of a sing in the church choir kind of way, you know, and I don't think they thought it was something I would ever want to pursue professionally.
Yeah.
And later on, when I kind of did want to pursue it professionally, they freaked out a little bit, you know, because it's such a risky career path. And all of that. How did your parents react when you told them that you wanted to sing and act?
They were fully supportive. The singing came a little bit later. Like I was singing from like as soon as I could talk pretty much.
Yeah.
But when I really wanted to do it, you know, I was like in middle school and stuff, and they were really supportive. But the acting thing, they actually, my mom, when I was like, I think I did like my first acting thing at like 7 or 8, maybe 8. And she kind of was like, I think saw that I was interested in it. It was like, hey, would you want to do this? And so we went out and got an agent and I started auditioning and stuff.
Wow.
She really like, so she loved that. But my parents have been really, I mean, extremely supportive. Like me and my siblings, they were always like stressed the importance of academics. Like we all went to like very good schools and all of us got very good grades and like, you know, so that was for sure a priority, but they all supported our passions. Like I have a younger sister that's a singer and actor as well. They fully, like she went to Berklee College of Music. She's phenomenal.
Oh, sure.
They really pushed, they were supportive of that. My other sister went to UVA for like fashion design and art.
Wow.
That my brother was a very good visual artist. So they always supported us. For me, it was really cool because like when I, some of the instruments I didn't really learn until, I didn't really pick up like drums and guitar until like college and beyond that. And so I had a drum kit in my basement during the summers at home and no one ever got mad for me, like making a ton of noise in the house.
Yeah.
And my parents were always like, my dad, like, you're improving. It sounds great. You know? So they never were like, don't play the drums. I'd play for like hours, you know, they never stopped. And then when I was in law school, the band that I was in, we started to like get more local recognition. And so we started to like travel and stuff and play a lot of cool shows. And my parents would always ask me, like, they knew I was in law school and they'd be like, the law school was almost like an afterthought. They'd be like, how was the show this weekend? What was the crew?
Nice.
They knew that it was something important to me. So they just pushed me. They were like, if you think this, you do it. And I'm really grateful for that because like you said, your parents freaked out. Lots of my friends who had any sort of whatever, their parents were like discouraged it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I want to take you back to law school for just a second, because I did kind of gloss over that in the intro. But did you ever pursue law or work in law at all?
Yeah, so I did. I don't practice. I did get my law degree and I did do like disability like rights kind of work. Like I split my coursework in law school between corporate law and then like the disability advocacy, just human rights, social justice. I took a number of courses in that area.
I love it.
I did work in the legal field. Like I was a paralegal right after college and I had done like legal, like support stuff in that. But then when in just like the music stuff was so important to me, you know, and when I graduated in like the recession essentially. So it was like really tough to do that. And it was hard studying for the bar from like a financial perspective.
Yeah.
I just, my heart really wasn't in it. And so it was just like, I was way more focused on the art stuff than legal, you know?
Yeah. So, well, clearly that worked out for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I did do some stuff in that realm and like, you know, I got like a taste of it and a little experience there. Always in the back pocket if I ever wanted to like really go after it, but it's just not where my heart hasn't been there for a time.
So. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. I think that it's great that, you know, that your parents gave you that kind of upbringing and that they were so supportive of what you really, really loved. So that's fantastic. I want to talk about the song Spaces for a second.
Sure. Yeah.
Because I looked on YouTube this morning and the video for this song, you probably know this, but the video has over 744,000 views.
Yeah.
Are you aware?
Yeah. Like, yeah. So it's so cool.
That blew my mind. I love this song. I have not been able to get it out of my head since I listened to it again this morning. Do you mind telling us the backstory on the song and how it was created?
No, not at all. Yeah. So it's a really cool partnership. So Genentech, you know, in partnership with myself and 10 other members from the SMA community, they wanted to really highlight just the lives of people with SMA. They have a program called SMA My Way, just, you know, talking about everyone's lives, you know, and just like all the cool things that people in our community are doing, such as yourself. Like I know that you're an author and you're doing all these things and like that stuff is not really talked about, you know, a lot. It's it can be very SMA diagnosis, kind of like clinical focused, you know?
Yeah.
So they did this program and they wanted to just kind of like highlight that, like, a lot of the people in the community feel that we are not represented in, you know, those other, in entertainment or whatever it might be. And so we're doing all these great things. They wanted to highlight that. And they thought a good way to do it was through song. So they brought myself together with the other folks and we just kind of sat down and had a brainstorm about, like, the ideas and lyrics that we wanted to, convey in the song. Mm-hmm. And so then from that brainstorm, I kind of boiled everything down into a rough draft of what we wanted to say. Really, really, really wanted to focus on it not being so like, oh, you're inspirational solely based on the fact that you have SMA.
Or, yeah.
You know, really wanted to like not fall into kind of those tropes. And then I worked with two music industry execs. One is he's like a three-time Grammy nominated producer. He actually works with lots of big country artists.
Oh, okay.
And so that was cool. And then the other one is he's a music industry executive, very high ranking at Universal Music.
Uh-huh.
And so we've sat down, just like refined it and made it into what Spaces currently is in terms of like lyrics and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And they had input about, like, they know what is successful on radio and stuff, you know, so that input was very, very valuable.
Yeah.
That's where Spaces came from. And then the music video was Dominic Evans spearheaded that. Dominic has SMA type 3 as well.
Mm-hmm.
Dominic, I thought, did an incredible job with the video of just,
yeah,
you know, what he wanted to say. And like, I thought he did it in such a tasteful and beautiful way. And so,
mm-hmm,
got to give credit to Dominic there, with obviously a team of like also really good creative professionals.
Right.
Who are doing amazing, incredible work in Hollywood. And that's where all of the stuff came from. And it's just been a really amazing ride and experience. So
I bet. How long did it take, like, start to finish?
Honestly, Mindy, it didn't take that long.
Really?
Yeah, so it happened last summer. We did the brainstorm in, I think, early July.
Uh-huh.
And after the brainstorm, that was like a Thursday or something. I think by Sunday, that Sunday, I had finished the rough draft. Then I met with Barry and Tom, who were the professionals, like Wednesday or Thursday. And then I think by that weekend, this final solo was done. So it was like, honestly, like 10-day process maybe to have the song, you know, done.
Uh-huh.
And then the video was just kind of being worked once the lyrics were finalized.
Mm-hmm.
The video worked, but I don't even think that was like a long process. And then we did the song and the video back to back on a Thursday and Friday in the middle of September. And then it was pretty much done. Post every, you know, did the edits and all that stuff, like in studio and all that stuff, and it was done. So
wow,
it was not a long process, and I think the project kind of was conceived like spring of last year. So
wow, that's amazing. And you know, I have to comment because, you know, you mentioned the whole inspiration factor and all, yeah, of that, and you know, it's all, the whole thing is so well done and tasteful, like you said. And you know, when you watch this thing, you could be talking about anybody, you know? And what I loved so much about it is that in my, you know, sort of humble interpretation, it's like about seeing potential in people, you know? And in fact, my favorite line from the song is, "I'm so much more than what you see and what you bargained for." I love that. It like still gives me goosebumps.
I love that. Yeah. I think, I'm glad that you said that, Mindy. Like, that was definitely one of the things. I mean, it was created by the SMA community,
mm-hmm,
for the disability community and for non-disabled people too. Everyone outside of that, just, I think it is really relatable. Like, I've gotten feedback from people who don't have disabilities at all. And they're like, they tell me what this song means to them. And
yeah,
nothing to do with disability for them, you know? So I think we didn't want it to be very broad and just relatable, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, for so many of us living with disabilities, we are underestimated on a regular basis. Yes. and because of our physical limitation and limitations. And it's so important for the rest of the world to realize that what they should see when they look at not just people with disabilities, but anyone, like you said, is the potential and not the limitations. So I do want to ask you, how does your diagnosis of SMA factor into your singing, playing instruments? And, for me, again, we have a different type of SMA, but I've got a slightly compromised respiratory situation. And so, is that anything that it makes that presents a challenge at all in what you do?
From the instrumental side of things, it does. As time has gone on, I've gotten weaker. Like when I was in college, I was at a jazz fusion band. I was the drummer, and we would do 3 and 4 hour sets, and I could pretty much do it. We would take little breaks here and there, but we would do songs that were 20, 30 minutes long.
Wow.
And I'm stopping because I'm the drummer and I can't stop.
Yeah.
So I could do that. I definitely can't do that now.
Yeah.
But, I can definitely play songs and like take breaks and stuff, but just the stamina is not there from a guitar's perspective. Same thing. I will have to take breaks and stuff. Like I can't play guitar like continuously as long. Like I used to play guitar like up until, let's say, 2018, I was doing 3 hour guitar shows.
Wow.
Taking a few breaks in between for 5 minutes here and there, but I could do it. Mm-hmm. If I'm practiced and like rehearsed and in that mode, I could still do that, I think. But you just notice it. But I've also learned how to, you learn how to adjust. Like I learned how to rest my arm on the guitar to kind of save it or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I would say those are the instrumental side of things. From a vocal side, airway and stuff, my respiratory is actually like I'm at like pretty much 100% for
awesome.
That. So not from there, but I do get it's a muscle. Like I get neck spasms and like my tongue and stuff, that'll spasm up.
It doesn't have
to climb, but it does. So I have to like account for that if I'm singing. Yeah. If it does start to happen, I have to kind of adjust and deliver a note.
Yeah.
Where I'm trying to almost like mask my tongue. And like I said, it doesn't happen live a ton, but it's a consideration that's there. So that would be the main thing for singing for me. It's not really breath. It's like the muscle side of it with like, because SMA affects our muscles. So
gotcha.
Just kind of like accounting for that,
Yeah. But honestly, I think again, you bring up such a good point because, we do kind of figure out ways to adjust for or adapt the things that come up. So I have no doubt that you've come up with methods and things that work for you. Yeah. And the other thing I'll say is, I did do so much singing in my younger years that I think that it was actually incredibly good exercise for my respiratory function. And so I bet so much of what you do and playing the instruments and everything probably keeps you quite healthy.
For sure. Yeah. I definitely think so, Mm-hmm. And it's like you said too, it's just with the adjustments, it's like no one, I've made it to a point where like no one would know if I even had like a muscle spasm or something happen. You know what I mean? You just get, you learn to know your body and like what you need to do to execute.
Right.
Like, I haven't even really had that issue arise, but it's like something I'm like aware of and I'm like, oh, but you just do it in a way that you know how to get the job done. Like,
absolutely.
Like as people with SMA or other disabilities, we're really crafty at like, because this world was not designed for us, We know how to get what we need to do done and like live our lives operating within these parameters that are not, they're not fair and the equity is not there, but like, we know how to do what we got to do because we want to, live our lives and stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think personally, all of us kind of go through our days kind of redesigning the world on a daily basis
100%.
With the things that we have to accomplish. And so that's a really good segue because I wanted to ask you, we hear a lot about needing more positive representation of individuals with disabilities in the media. And like I said earlier, you're a strong advocate of that. Do you feel like we're making progress in Hollywood in terms of inclusion of individuals with disabilities in movies and TV and commercials?
I do, Mindy. Like, I do think we're making little strides here. Mm-hmm. I think the conversation, I'm hearing that conversation just about like what you said, we need more representation. That is, I see that more often. I still think like the actual effects of like, if you look at it from the numbers of like how many roles are cast and what percentage represents, we're still not there yet. But I do see people with disabilities landing roles and like whatever they might be. So I think mm-hmm. we're starting to get there. It just could be so much more, but that's how it is from like any social justice kind of movement, right?
Yeah.
The needle gets moved. It's not a lot. The needle's moved, you know, in such small increments.
Yeah.
But it's moved. It takes such a great amount of effort and force to like make those small things. But over time, it might not be in our lifetime, but hopefully, historically, when you look back, you see the progression and we'll get where we want to be eventually. It just takes such a long time, you know?
Yeah.
I'm really hopeful because I do see small little changes. It's just not, I want the floodgates to open and just be like, oh, disability. It's all over.
Absolutely.
We're just not there.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know what? I mean, you're in the thick of it. You know, this is what you do every single day, and you're out there doing the work and doing the acting and the singing and all of that. What can the rest of us do to try to help encourage more of that in the entertainment industry?
Yeah, I think from that, Mindy, like I think also too, the representation needs to be on like both sides of the camera. Like mm-hmm. we need people who are like writers and directors and producers, you know, with disabilities, like also we need that representation to be there too, because then that'll pull everyone. I think that'll just get disability from like, you know, it'll be behind the scenes production side of things or the entertainment, like the visibility side of things.
Yeah.
So I think in the entertainment industry that, and I think just in the world, like we need people with disabilities in leadership roles to drive the change everywhere. And then we'll start to see disability like in corporate boardrooms or, you know, people's who are CEOs of companies or whatever it might be. Like all of that needs to be there. And I think that's what the support is too. And just also like, trust us to do the work, because we talked about it earlier. We're really creative people because
yeah.
we had to just to survive. And so that creativity is not siphoned off to like disability life. It's like that creativity runs throughout every aspect of our lives and our work, you know, our work lives and all that stuff. So it's going to be there mm-hmm. in all the things that we're doing. And so that's just going to make the world better. So I think that's how we support, is like put people in decision-making roles that have disabilities. And then, you know, and then also too, if you see that it's not there, then do something to make it there, you know,
yeah,
in the room or whatever. So,
yeah, that's such a good answer. So what are you working on right now?
So right now, I mean, it's like, it's I am in a play that I'm in a play that's actually about disability. And they're, you know, they're cast members with disabilities. The play runs from the 22nd through the 24th of June. So I'm just in rehearsals for that. That's happening.
And where can people see that?
So it's in California. There's a museum called the Valley View Relics Museum. That's the space for it. The play is called Schlitzy, Alive and Inside the Decaying Sideshow. Mm-hmm. And it's about a sideshow performer who had a disability in the early 1900s. And Schlitzy actually became pretty famous. They were in a movie called Freak, I think, uh-huh. which is a well-known, I think, movie. I can't remember the year. I think it was in the 50s. And they got a lot of prominence through that movie. But the play kind of deals with like the exploitation of sideshow performers. But also like during that time, disability was not, you know, people were hidden and stuff. And so there was also people with disabilities found community in that space as well. So it kind of deals with, it just shows both sides of that.
Uh-huh.
So that's happening. So really excited to be a part of that.
Very cool.
And I have a piece of poetry published in a book at the end of the year. That's a Disability of Hierarchies book. I think that's coming out of the University of Washington. So that's, I'm excited about that. I'm auditioning a bunch, you know, like starting just like book more stuff. I just did like a print. We talked about representation. I just did a print job back in April. I'm not sure when we'll see the final product for that. But what was cool about that was, and it kind of hit me because I was thinking about it after the fact, but like I have a cane in the ad, but I also have like a romantic partner in the ad. Like I'm holding hands and holding arms with someone. And I thought that was really cool because I just realized, even though we're starting to see more disability representation, we don't see like the romantic side of things.
Yeah.
Like seeing it as like romantically or sexually desirable.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought this project was cool because, you know, when I was on set shooting, they were just like, hey, do you mind like holding hands with this person? And I was,
yeah.
The person was like, do you mind if I hold your hand? It's like, no, like, I think this is actually really cool because we don't see disability portrayed as like a romantic thing that we have in our lives. And I thought that was really cool. So excited for that to be shown.
Nice.
And then I'm going to the Cure SMA conference this week. I'm performing spaces at there's like a lunch there on Friday. So excited about that. And then there's some projects down the road that are coming up that like a lot of times I can't speak about it, you know?
Yeah. No.
I can't talk about it until afterwards, but some really cool, exciting things about that. And I'm just like, I'm auditioning a lot more, which I'm really excited about, and just a lot of pending stuff. And, you know, like I just did the Special Olympics closing ceremony.
That's right.
I performed spaces. So
wow,
it's just cool. Like I have performances coming up for music, acting, print stuff, whatever it might be. I just think this one's funny, but I was supposed to walk there was a Tommy Hilfiger adaptive fashion show about a month ago.
Uh-huh.
I was supposed to walk into that as a part of the, there's an event called the Race to Erase MS.
Uh-huh.
And like a lot of celebrities and stuff were there. I was supposed to walk in there. When I got to the event, I tested positive for COVID, but it was false positive. Like I have all the, you know, vaccinated, boosted, and like I had tested negative like a bunch of times, like afterwards and before, and it was, that was a bummer, but like,
oh, so disappointing.
Yes, I miss it for like no reason, but like I am at least starting to like do cool jobs and stuff, and I'm really excited about that and just what's to come. So that's where I'm at. I've been working on a script for a long time.
Oh wow.
I haven't like it's about halfway finished, so I do want to put that out there and like shop it around once it's done, but it's just like I'm contending with all the other things plus like a day job, and
right,
this stuff happens so short notice a lot of times in like the space, you know. So so that's cool. It looks like also too, the last thing I'll add is I think I might be singing, performing at like a really cool, there's like an indie, they're a record label, but they also do, they have an awards showcase.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be, I think I'll be, they asked me about singing at that in New York in September. So looks like I'll be doing that. It's just like a lot of, it's a lot of cool stuff. And
yeah,
list of events and things I'm doing keeps growing, you know, but.
So you're bored is what you're telling me.
Yeah. I'm like getting so much sleep and well.
Oh my gosh. That is so awesome. And what's even better is I also spoke to Leah Zelaya, who was she's a young actress in the movie Marry Me with J-Lo. And the two of you are having such huge success, and you're such nice people. Like, I love seeing good things happen to good people. So I'm really excited for you.
Like, yeah. I, you know, like, I'm just happy to be able to audition and just, you know, like be considered for this stuff. And then when you do get the, you know, get the job, like, even more of a very cool thing. But it's just like an honor to really to like talk about, you know, to be a disabled person in this time and like really showcase what we do, that, and it's not just like here's our human stuff that we're doing, but like we're disabled and we're, you know, hopefully bringing light to that, and hopefully these things help to bring other people into like whatever they want to do, even if it's not acting or entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Like they want to run a company or be a director of operations somewhere. Like I hope that helps.
Yeah.
People, like it hopefully creates avenues for them to just do that as a person with a disability. So
I love that. I absolutely love that. I've got like two more quick questions for you. I know you're like getting ready to travel. And so I do want to ask you, you know, what goals do you have for yourself in the future?
Yeah, honestly, Mindy, like this is what I really, really loved. This entertainment stuff is just like I said, this is what I love to do. It's my heart. It's my driving kind of, you know, thing. I really want to be able to like make a really solid career out of this. Like I want to be, you know, in more films. I want to have lead roles in films. I would love to be, you know, in a lead role on like a TV show or have a recurring. I want to do more print stuff. I'm a really big fashion fan and
like, yeah,
I love that. So I want to do more like print and like runway stuff, you know. And I want to write, I want to have my own TV show and like, you know, long-term, I mean, I went to business school for college. So I want to like eventually run my own company, run my own production studio or whatever it be. I want to have my own clothing line one day. So like all that stuff, like I want to do that. So that's like the long-term goal, but, I'm really having fun. Like, I feel like to do that, I need this experience as well. So that's like the long term. And I really want to have whatever I do, I want it to be a space where I can like have, I can hire people who are underrepresented, you know, like from every underrepresented community, you know what I mean? Like people of color, people with disabilities, you know, people from the LGBTQ community, like all that good stuff. I'm sorry if I'm forgetting any.
I know, the whole entire world.
Yeah, I want those perspectives and like everything. I want those folks to have an opportunity. So I just really want to like, hopefully make it so that other people can like also, they can live their dreams too. So that's what I want to do, Mindy.
I love it.
Like that. And I love to write, like I want to write a book too at some point as well. So
do it. Yeah. Absolutely. Such good stuff. So for other kids out there who might be listening and have ambitions to act or sing or do fashion or write, what kind of advice would you give to them?
I would say, like really be dedicated to like just being better at it. You know, like, you're always learning. I don't think you're ever going to be at the point where you're the best ever, you know? So like, from that angle, you should always be working to try to get to the point of being the best ever. Although I think that's probably unattainable. So like, you know, and also too, from like, you know, talking to older people who have been in the space of, you know, doing this work and have disabilities, like I know from their experience, like they always say like, people are always looking for a reason to like cut you or not give you the job. And especially if you have a disability, because there are those misconceptions or prejudices of being like, oh, you're disabled. You're not going to be good. Like you're not going to be able to act. You're not able to do this role justice. So don't give them, even though it's wrong and false, I still say you want to be the best you can. So like train really hard, get a vocal teacher, get guitar lessons, drum lessons, whatever it might be, take acting lessons and just align yourself with like mentors who are doing it and who have done it. Like, you know, I think with art, it's just like, you can never, it's kind of so amorphous or ambiguous. Like it can be so many things and it covers a lot of ground in so many areas. So I think you just want to be as well versed in those areas as you can. And like the training and just doing that gives you that experience, you know, like with music and live performances, I've seen so many situations happen like that you could never control or even think of. And you have to like roll with it and be like, oh, I got to adjust and like, you know, make sure the show goes smoothly with this variable that I would have never factored in. So just that stuff happens and just but that's training for me.
Yeah.
Also to do as many gigs as you can, whether like you might think they're like small gigs that are not worth your time. Trust me, they are worth your time. I've learned so much and gotten other cool things from those shows where I was playing to a crowd of one person.
You know? Yeah.
So do everything starting out take every opportunity that you can, because it's that's the best practice.
I would totally agree with that. When I started doing public speaking, I had someone very early on who said, speak everywhere you can. Do it for free. Do it for 5 minutes. Do it for an hour, you know, to this group, to that group. And it's so true. It's just, it's right. Such good practice. And that's what it's all about. I had another person who asked me when I was starting to do music, she was like, so what's one thing that you do every single day to, you know, practice your craft or whatever? And I was like, oh, I'm supposed to do something every day. And it's true. I mean, practice, train. So yeah, all very good advice.
Yes, I sing every day and I do something acting related every day. And, you know, I've heard several times, like from people, you know, in music and acting with, you know, they're like, a lot of times success for people looks like it's overnight, but that's very, very rare. Like yeah. It may happen for like one in whatever cases, but typically people have been doing it for a long time, decades, even before we see them and know their names and stuff.
Right.
It's like all those gigs that you're talking about, Mindy, of like speaking for free or doing whatever. Those folks were doing that stuff for a very long time. And it all built up to when we see them in what we would call success, you know? So
absolutely. Yeah. Definitely. Okay. Is there anything I have not asked you that I should have asked you?
No, Mindy, you've covered, like, the questions were great and very thorough and I really appreciate them. So I think you've covered all the bases for me.
Awesome. Well, again, it's been such a joy talking to you, and I just, your excitement and your enthusiasm comes through just listening to you, and I'm so excited for you and everything that's ahead. And I hope that you'll remember us and come back and yeah, just all the success in the world.
Thank you for listening. For more information about the guests you heard from today, go check them out at mda.org/podcast. And to learn more about the Muscular Dystrophy Association, the services we provide, how you can get involved, and to subscribe to Quest Magazine or to Quest Newsletter, please go to mda.org/quest. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd be grateful if you'd leave a review. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button so we can keep bringing you great content, and maybe share it with a friend or two. Thanks, everyone. Until next time, go be the light we all need in this world.